Hello and welcome to Gin and Spooks. I'm Laura.
I'm Emma.
And what are we talking about today, Emma?
Haunted asylums.
Spooky, spooky.
Wasn't expecting that.
And what are we drinking today, Emma?
They're like Southside mojitos. It's like mojitos but with gin instead of rum. So I've put strawberry puree, lime juice, mint leaves, topped with tonic water and gin, obviously. I'm not impressed with it. I'm not going to lie. I'm very sad about my creation here.
No, I think it'd be... I think the problem is neither of us really like tonic.
I fucking hate tonic.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find soda water so bad. Should have just got lemonade.
Well, I'm still enjoying it, apart from the tonic taste.
Unless you've got lemonade in the house.
I do have got lemonade. I do have got lemonade in the house. Might top it up in a bit.
Yeah, just top it up and should be alright. Highly suggest with lemonade, don't put tonic water in it unless you like the taste of gas in your mouth.
It just makes my mouth taste like butt, I think. Like
butt.
Yeah. Or like when you've if you've been giving a presentation in front of the class for ages.
And your mouth's as dry as Gandhi's really flip-flop.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. That's why I'm so disappointed, because I'm like, oh, I was hoping for it to be like quite tasty, and I'm like...
No, all the other elements are really like nice. Ass. Like, I love the strawberry bit. To be honest, I might just get strawberry and lemonade in the next one.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. Mm. With a bit of mint.
Yeah.
Everything else is fine, just don't put tonic water in it. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about tonic water. First, I want to say, if you hear any background commotion, it's my cats in the background.
Not mine this time.
No.
How the turntables.
So here we go. So I've done research on one particular specific asylum.
Okay.
So I've got a huge bit about the background of it, because it's quite horrific but interesting.
Okay.
Basically. So the asylum I have done is Penhurst Asylum, which is in Spring City in Pennsylvania, America. So in 1903, the Pennsylvania legislature authorized the creation of a school and hospital owned by the state to preserve the health and occupation of people with intellectual disabilities. A commission was created to identify a suitable piece of land to build the hospital and to help discover the number and status of the feeble-minded and epileptic people in the state. So I'm going to be saying feeble-minded and epileptic people because that's the people they were targeting. I don't know if targeting is not the right word, but that's how they described it. They wanted to help the feeble-minded and epileptic. So they put them in the same
like
category.
A specific category, like standing on the corner of streets and going, are you feeble and epileptic? Well, this is the advert for you.
Yeah. So they found 1,146 feeble-minded people in the state hospitals and about 2,600 found in charitable housing, other hospitals, reformatories and prisons. All these people that were in need of immediate specialised care. So it's the 1900s, early 1900s, so if you had a child that was not normal, it was very commonplace to just kind of put them in an asylum and forget they ever existed.
Wow.
Yeah, horrendous.
Wow, that's fucking awful, but okay.
The institution was originally called the Eastern Pennsylvania State Institution for the Feeble-Minded and Epileptic. The superintendent was a guy called Wesley White, who was a former president of the American Association of Medical Dosimetrists. So I googled what dosimetrist is.
Yeah.
And it's someone who creates a care plan to deliver patients their needed dose of radiation with minimal side effects. So essentially, if they need radiation therapy, the dosimetrist, however you say it, would decide the best way to give them the radiation without, like, fucking up their liver and stuff.
Oh, okay.
It took them 5 years to build the first set of buildings. The majority of the buildings were two-story in red brick and were connected with fireproof tunnels that had walkways on top to help move patients around. It was designed to provide a large number of small rooms, which had two or three beds in, a few small dormitories, which had 8 to 10 beds in, and then a large day room for exercise. So they had like schoolhouses, a gymnasium, a workshop, an isolating hospital that could house about approximately 500 inmates or patients is the capacity at this point. They also had their own railroad and train station to help deliver coal and supplies. They had farm buildings, a power plant, a sewage plant. So it was kind of basically very, like, self-sustaining. So I think the idea was you put your kid in here and they led as much of a normal life as they could, yeah, essentially, like on the farm and stuff like that. But so the buildings were divided into two categories. So some that were educational and industrial, so obviously the schoolhouses and then the farms. And then the other group was custodial and asylum. So 1908 was when the first set of buildings were finished. And in November of that year, the first patient, known as patient number one, was admitted. I think I read somewhere that all the patients just had numbers. They weren't known by names. They were just numbers the whole way through.
Dehumanising, isn't it?
Yeah. Within 4 years, Penhurst was overcrowded. For many parents, there were no other options in place to help them with a disabled child. And I think it was very much advertised as this is what you do, this is where you go with your child. You just leave them there. So on admission, patients were classified into various categories. Mental category, you were either an imbecile or insane. Mm-hmm. Physical, you were either epileptic or healthy. And then dental was either good, poor, or treated teeth. Interesting.
Okay.
Allocation. Residents were assigned to tasks such as mattress making, shoemaking and repair, farming, laundry and other domestic duties, sewing, baking, butchering, painting and working in the shop. And those were the ones that were capable of doing those kinds of things. Although the hospital was designed for people with epilepsy and intellectual or developmental disabilities, society pressured them to admit many people with all sorts of conditions, people that society wanted removing from the gene pool. So I think I heard a story about this guy that was just an arsonist and he got put in there.
Just casually.
This kid that likes setting fire to things just got put in with all these intellectually disabled people. So there was a huge thing at this time in America where they wanted this kind of person removing from the gene pool entirely. Mm. As if that would work.
They're just going to pop up later. Like,
abnormalities are still going to arrive. Anyway, in 1912... the superintendent reported to the Board of Trustees that he believed it was wrong to place the feeble-minded and epileptic in the same institution as they are not the same and require entirely different treatment. The admission of individuals with epilepsy and normal intelligence continued for a few years until the mission of the institution was changed and clarified, and only people with intellectual disabilities were admitted. So yeah, like I said, those people with complete normal intelligence and epilepsy were being lumped in the same category as people that were not of normal intelligence.
Yeah. And then you're going to so those people with epilepsy, but they're got normal levels of intellect, are going to get hindered because you're grouping them with the same people that are
Exactly.
Unfortunately, they've got mental disabilities. So
exactly.
You can't turn around and say that mental disabilities are basically linked to them being dumb, because it's just that they learn in different ways, autism.
Yeah, exactly.
They're quite creative. Their development is based on arts and music and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't lump someone.
I think they were just being lazy, basically. That's what.
They were really, really well. Partly is because I think it was one of the only institutions for a long way.
Mm.
Two, it's the early 1900s. There's not that much research on a lot of things. Three, I was going to say, they're really, really understaffed, ridiculously understaffed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in 1913, the Pennsylvania legislature appoints a commission for the care of the feeble-minded, partly in response to concerns raised by Penhurst Board of Trustees. So essentially the Board of Trustees has been Hans, this isn't working, help. So the Pennsylvania legislature commission for the care of feeble-minded concludes that the disabled are unfit for citizenship, they posed a menace to the peace, and that they recommended a program of custodial care in order to break the endless reproductive chain. How horrific is that?
Define menace of the peace. We've got Dennis Menace actually walking down the street going, fuck off.
No.
Go away, peace.
I think it was just that time where they just wanted the normal, fully high-functioning family.
Bland.
And that's boring. That's peaceful.
Bland.
Dull as fuck.
Vanilla.
Yeah.
Whoa.
My family is vanilla.
My family is Neapolitan.
My family was a bit spicy, but we sent Alfred off to Penhurst, and now we're vanilla. In 1916, they increased the capacity of the hospital by deciding to build a group of cottages solely for female inmates in order to segregate them from the rest of the bunch to prevent pregnancies. These borders didn't open until 1930, though. In 1930, there was a report of the Board of Trustees said that there are 1,247 individuals in residence with only 192 staff. So I think some of these patients were the kind of people that needed round-the-clock care.
Yeah.
And you've got 1,200 of them and only 200 staff.
Yeah, because that makes sense.
Makes complete sense. The female colony buildings were thought to help temporarily relieve the overcrowding, but at this point they had 900 applications for admission on file, and they were getting about 250 new applications per year coming in. In 1955, the population peaks at 3,500 individuals. So by the mid-1960s, Penhurst had been open for 50 years. It housed 2,791 people, most of them children, which was about 900 more than the administration thought the buildings could comfortably accommodate. That's disgusting, isn't it? They had 900 more people in there that they could comfortably...
Yeah, but then I think it's also down to, this staff, like, just admitting anyone.
Yeah. Well, in theory as well, it was supposed to be a bit of a rehabilitation for a lot of them. So it was like... almost like a special needs school. That's what it was supposed to be, a special needs school. But they just did not have enough staff to give the patients the care that they needed to actually rehabilitate these people. As a state school, they had to take what they were given, so they didn't really have any choice. It wasn't private owned. They just had to do the best with what they've got. Only 200 of the residents were in any kind of art, education, or recreation programs that would help improve their condition, even though many of those patients were high functioning enough to improve with the right care. The administrators interviewed in this program recognised that they were falling short of their ideal treatment, but with a crumbling building, a budget shortfall of $4 million, and only 9 medical doctors and 11 teachers, none of them with special education training, their hands were tied.
It's like a disaster waiting to happen, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, in 1968, there's a 5-part documentary or news report called Suffer the Little Children was released. So this was created by CBS correspondent Bill Baldini, and it was the first time the conditions in the facility had been shown to the general public. It showed that the facility was filled with neglect and abuse. The patients were often shackled to their beds, were shown rocking, pacing and twitching. There was unsanitary conditions, malnourished, dirty, very inhumane conditions. Many were severely disabled, but others were quite lucid and coherent, but had withdrawn into themselves from the sensory overstimulation because it was so noisy and frightening in there. It wasn't providing them with adequate care and mental stimulation. So I watched the... I haven't watched this documentary.
Mm-hmm.
It's on YouTube, though.
Oh, right, okay.
However, Ghost Adventures with Zach Bagans, they have an episode on Penhurst State Asylum, and they actually interview some ex-residents, some ex-members of staff, and Bill Bedini, who's the guy from that made the documentary. So he says on that there's quite a lot of kids that look like they were just in cages. He said, I want to say it's like a ward of like 80 kids, all in like these cage type things, with 2 members of staff. So the kids were covered in their own shit and not being helped at all, purely because there was only 2 members of staff. He said the staff were absolute angels, but they just couldn't. One of the guys on there, who was an old doctor, I think, said that over a year, each patient was only getting 3 minutes of the adequate psychological treatment. There was a lot of kids aged 3 to 5 in there that couldn't walk, purely because they didn't have the facilities to help them learn to crawl, let alone walk.
Yeah.
Also, I think there's this, I can't remember the figure, but they compared how much money was being spent per animal at the local zoo, and it was over double the amount of money that was spent per resident at this facility.
It's just really upsetting, though, because, like, these people, they're still human beings, mm-hmm. and, like, you're treating them like they're nothing just because they happen to have, like, epilepsy or, like, mental or, like, physical disabilities that kind of hinder them. They don't necessarily stop them from, like, blending into society. Yeah. They just hinder them. And I think it's just... It's awful. Like, looking back on our history, it's really fucking awful to know that all this shit happened.
Yes.
So, like, innocent beings, innocent people that just never asked for it, never deserved it in the first place.
Yeah, completely. But I guess part of it is definitely understaffing, which isn't fair. Understaffing, over-admission. But then there were some horrible people in there too, because there's quite a lot of abuse from the staff members. Abuse
which
within...
Which doesn't really surprise me, to be honest, because...
Abuse within...
not everyone's going to be nice and understanding to, like, like, say, a young child or something.
Yeah. There's quite a lot of abuse within residents as well. Hence why they tried to separate the females to get rid of pregnancies.
But then, like, you know, the superintendent of, like, the hospital or what it, the asylum at the end of the day, they should have, like, put their foot down or should have at least made...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, the first guy tried at some point because he was the one that realised, well, actually, you shouldn't be putting fully functioning intellectual epileptics in with others with more severe mental disabilities. I haven't got, like, how long he was there for or whatever, because we're in the late 60s, early 70s now. But so one of the inmates on the documentary is asked what he wants most in the world, and he said to get out of Penhurst. There's a doctor that worked there called Dr. Jesse Fear. So he was the head physician at the school for a number of years. In the documentary, he talks of a punishment, which he calls downgrading, where he tries to offend the dignity of patients with behavioural problems by putting them amongst the profoundly mentally challenged groups, like we said earlier, like fully...
Oh, this guy. Yeah. This fucking guy is making me angry.
Yeah. So this would often cause the patient to withdraw into themselves because they felt ridiculed by their peers and completely isolated because they were surrounded by people that were just not on their level intellectually. It often led to a lot of mental anguish and then developmental regression, so it made them worse. So,
I hope he feels fucking proud of himself.
He's dead now.
Thank God for that. Absolute peasant.
Yeah, so there was also a lot of patients. So if a patient was a biter and they tried a lot to stop them from being a biter, they'd just remove their teeth. So Jesse Fear, he got suspended for 30 days for using harmless but painful injections on his patients. So he seemed really proud of this technique. As in, he would inject them with the most painful thing that wouldn't cause any damage, just if they were misbehaving.
I mean, I don't like injections full stop. I hate needles.
I'm quite good at them now. I used to faint all the time, but I'm pro.
So, you know, that in itself is traumatic enough. Like, especially when you go to the hospital and you always have to have the biggest needle coming ready, like, for blood tests. That's it. Fucking meter-long needle in your arm. But that's awful.
Yeah. So a lot of these patients as well were just completely overdosed on medication just to keep them quiet, I suppose, whilst they dealt with other patients.
But again, like, this is just like, what's it called now? The social, or like the justice system.
Yeah.
Like social care and...
Yeah, yeah.
It's failing again. Like, it's not great now. There's still things happening now that, like, people should be, like...
ashamed of.
Yeah. Or stopping from happening.
Yeah.
And they just don't give a shit.
Yeah. So any other acts of abuse are not documented, so have been lost with time. But if anyone's interested, I'd recommend the Suffer the Little Children documentary. I think that goes... You actually see scenes in the hospital.
I think that generally would make me upset, though.
Yeah, that's why I've not watched it, because I watched, like, the first little bit and was a bit like, Oh, but I would actually... Even if you hate Zach Bagans, the Penhurst Asylum episode of... Ghost Adventures is really interesting. Mm. The ghost hunting bit is a bit over the top because it's Ghost Adventures.
Yeah.
But he talks to another guy that worked there, and he said he used to stand in the courtyard and you could just hear people screaming from all the buildings around, coming out the windows. It was just screaming. And he said it was really eerie the day it closed when it just fell silent for the first time. They also talked to an ex-patient there.
I can't imagine it. Like, I'd think if I was ever to, like, visit there, if it was still open, unless you would want to help as many people. Because, like, when I was younger, my dad used to work at a special needs care home.
Yeah.
So we used to go around and visit him all the time. And we used to hang around with these people that are, like, fully grown adults, but they've just got really, like, severe disabilities. They're the loveliest people, like, ever. Yeah. So, I mean, they were quite vicious when they lost their temper because they weren't able to control themselves as much as, like, say we are. But they're, like, the loveliest people ever.
Yeah.
They're just really nice. And some of them would obviously have, like, the mentality of, like, a five-year-old. But at that time, I was a kid, so it would have been great.
Yeah.
But yeah, genuinely the loveliest people. And when people are bullying them and mistreating them, because yeah. they're like at a disadvantage. I just yeah. want to kick them in the face. I just want to like
yes.
hurt them back.
Yeah.
Because these people don't understand why.
It's like a weird power trip that they just feel the need to overpower someone, but they can't overpower
it. It's about dominating yes, someone. That's
the word.
Why, like,
that's what I was looking for.
You know, obviously, like with women, men feel like they need to dominate the, like, what is classed as yeah. the inferior sex, but they also do it to people who, you know, are just at a disadvantage. And yeah. that, and some women do it as well, yeah, not just yeah. men.
Not all men.
Not all men.
So it took 2 decades of legal actions, federal judgments made and overturned, and growing financial crises for the place to be shut down. By the 1980s, overcrowding, lack of funds, inadequate staffing, and decades of abuse and neglect accusations caught up with the operation, and in 1987, Penhurst closed its doors. So they then did like what's called a longitudinal study. So the Penhurst longitudinal study finds that Penhurst residents who moved to the community are better off in every way we know how to measure. Before the relocation of residents, 60% of families of Penhurst residents opposed to the residents leaving Penhurst. So they wanted them to stay.
Slags.
6 months after relocation, more than 80% of the same families came to agree that relocation had been the right decision. No shit. So, obviously, a place with this much history and past and torment and unimaginable amounts of death, unnecessary death, if anywhere was going to be haunted, this is it. And I almost feel a bit guilty that this horrendous stuff happened and now we're going to talk about ghost stories at the place. But you know that we are a true crime and paranormal podcast, so this covers both.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we kind of have to like be blasé in regards to like events that do happen like that, because
yeah,
obviously it's happened like a very long time ago.
Well,
sort of.
It's closed now.
Yeah.
And I have the utmost respect for the residents and stuff that lived there.
Yeah.
I mean, it is actually open now. You can do tours, including ghost tours, and they've got a bit of like a scare maze thing. So they're profiting and capitalising off the horror, which is kind of disgusts me. But then at the same time, they need to make money to kind of keep the place, not keep the place going, because it's not going, but to keep the place upkeep. Even though it's like peak.
And then like part of me feels a little bit hypocritical because obviously we're doing a podcast on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then at the same time, they don't necessarily have to like, they're just doing it for selfish reasons.
Yes.
They don't actually need like the money to upkeep because America's like fucking loaded.
If I was in the States, I'd kind of want to go for a historical tour. I wouldn't want to go on any of like the ghost hunt, maybe a ghost hunt, but none of like the theatrical.
I want to go in a scare maze because one mazes freak me out anyway.
Yeah, I hate
it's like the
mazes.
Feeling of being trapped. It's not for me.
No, thank you.
I would like to visit it, but then it's like similar to when you go to Auschwitz. It's like very eerie.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't go there to like prophetize like.
No.
What I'm doing, no. I'd go there on the basis of.
I'm interested
of
the, in the history. Yeah.
I've always been interested in that kind of stuff anyway. So.
Yeah.
But just setting up a fucking scare maze.
Yeah, so Ghost Adventures is like it's not my favourite ghost hunting programme, but it was actually a genuinely good episode. I think it's in season 2 or 3, so it's one of the earlier ones where they're not as like, oh my god, it's a demon, about everything.
They always have to say demon, don't they? And it's just like, bro.
So my favourite ever ghost hunting programme, I've realised recently, is Kindred Spirits.
I don't think I've watched that.
Oh, you need to, because they take a very calm, relaxed approach. They try and have conversations with the ghosts to work out who they are and what they're doing there and if they can help them and stuff.
Yeah.
And after watching that, going back to watching Ghost Adventures, I'm just like, nah, Zach, fuck off.
It's like Most Haunted when they're like, oh my god, what was that? It's like, it's probably a rat that's just walked past your foot.
Or it's the cameraman, like,
go ahead.
Anyway, so here are some of the ghost adventures. So, a place filled with as much violence, suffering and death as Penhurst has obviously become a famous hotspot for paranormal investigators. It is now a tourist attraction where you can go on ghost hunts and TV programmes such as Ghost Adventures. And I've put and BuzzFeed Unsolved. So I think BuzzFeed Unsolved have been there too.
Possibly. I haven't watched all of their episodes.
I think they have because I think they're going to the Mayflower building. Hey there, demons. It's me, your boy. Anyway.
I do love him. He's great.
The underground tunnels are now filled with all kinds of graffiti, from innocent Kilroy was here to satanic symbols. Many people have been known to break in and use the space as a place to experiment with the occult and try to summon all sorts of things. Which, you know.
Why? Why? Like, genuinely, why?
Why you do that?
What urge do you get when you're like, oh, you know what I'm going to do today?
Summon a demon.
Yeah.
Why? Or try to. Yeah.
I just don't get it. I just don't understand that.
A whole variety of evidence has been caught around the site from various paranormal investigators, including photos, videos, voice recordings, and personal encounters. Among the recordings, disembodied voices have been heard to say things like, go away, I'm upset, I'll kill you, why'd you come here, I'm scared, and why won't you leave? So now I've got a little list of buildings and various paranormal activity that's happened in there.
Those are the questions that are in my head.
Why won't you leave?
Talking to myself. Like.
So, Limerick building. Multiple EVPs have been found in here. They've also seen an apparition of a woman in an old-style nurse's uniform.
Lovely.
Which reminded me of Ash's story in the asylum from our listeners, our first listeners' stories episode. Anyway.
Oh, don't. Oh, no.
So in the Hershey building, a female child's voice can be heard on the third floor, and in Ghost Adventures there's talk to a few people that have like seen apparitions of a little girl.
No, I'm just not down with the kids.
No. So in the administration building, multiple voices have been heard on multiple occasions. EVPs have been caught of what sounds like a toilet flushing, despite the building having no running water or bathroom facilities. There's also been audio caught of some people like ghost adventuring. That's what I'm going to use. That's the term I'm going to use. Yes. And you can hear what sounds like someone throwing up in the background, and they're all like, what the fuck? Like, not even.
That's
like,
gross.
Yeah, I know. It's a hospital, though, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so, of all the things to hear, you're like, yeah, I just heard a ghost go.
Go home, ghost, you drunk. Another building, multiple EVPs have been found. Investigators report their legs being touched, which, you know, it's full of children, or it was full of children, so makes sense.
Sounds like my worst nightmare.
The Philadelphia building, they hear loud sounds and voices. So there's one group of investigators that heard like a huge bang. So they surrounded the building and entered via the tunnels. They couldn't find anyone in the building, and no one would have been able to leave without being caught.
Okay.
Just this huge noise. Oh. In the Quaker building, numerous shadows have been caught manifesting and dissipating, seemingly at will. One shadow appears to be a small female child with long hair. Another is hunched over with their long arms dangling.
Oh no. And sorry, I just got flashes of like so many horror games I've just seen.
Yeah.
Okay.
And other shadows peek around doorways or peek over other obstacles and then disappear.
I'm fucked.
Yeah.
I'm 6'1". I couldn't see shit like that.
You are more than everyone else.
I'm just gonna be like, no. just walk down like,
yeah.
Just hide in my face.
Doors and a rocking chair are known to move of their own accord. Investigators have been shoved, scratched and touched. In the basement, objects such as brass fixtures, small pry bar and stones have been thrown. Multiple EVPs have been recorded, as well as EMF spikes throughout the building, despite there being no electricity supply. So EMF measures your electromagnetic field, which is caused by like electrical equipment or just electricity. And it's thought that a high EMF means there's a ghost around. But you can get high EMF around like fuse boxes and shit. But
yeah.
If there's no electricity supplied to the building, where the fuck is the high EMF coming from? Okay, so the Mayflower Hall is my last one. Old-timey music, as if coming from a music box, can be heard coming from the third floor, but when investigators try to find the source, it stops. Lights turn off and on by themselves. Crying and laughter can be heard, along with the crashing of rusted metal. Medical equipment gets moved around. I have chills about the music box, though. Anyway, there's a presence in the basement known as the King. He is believed to have been Elvis. No, I'm kidding. He is believed to have been a maintenance worker in the late 40s, early 50s.
a really horrible man did not treat the patients kindly, so he is not a nice spirit, and he often leaves the smell of cigar smoke in the air. Investigators have had full-blown conversations with him over voice recorder. They've seen his shadow. They've heard his laugh. Haven't even been touched by him.
I tell them to fuck off.
Yeah. But, right, so they say they can smell cigarette smoke when he's around, or just cigars, but loads of people now leave him offerings of cigars to try and draw him out.
Okay.
So now I'm like, well, if you're in the room surrounded by cigars and cigarettes, it's gonna smell. It's gonna smell different to the actual smoke, yeah, yeah. Sure. But it's still gonna smell. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite upsetting. I think I felt like 10 different emotions within that little segment. It's just a bit upsetting that like it went on for so long and they just didn't do anything until like the last minute.
Yeah, 1987 it closed. So there's still people alive today that were inmates there.
I just couldn't even like grasp, you know.
No. The horror.
Yeah.
I know I've said it about 3 times already, but I'd absolutely recommend watching the Ghost Adventures episode.
Yeah.
Because there's more hauntings from that. Just imagining, walking around one of the old spooky buildings and then hearing, like, music, like a music box coming from upstairs.
Oh, no, that's like being in a horror game. Yes. Like, genuinely,
It's just thinking about it, it's giving me tears in my eyes. I can feel it. I'm that scared.
It just reminds me of all them horror gameplays that I watched on YouTube. Just music boxes. I used to have one when I was younger, but now I'm just like...
Yeah, no. I used to have one when I was younger.
No, thanks. I'm all right.
Had sunflowers on it.
Mine was there. I think mine was a ballerina.
Yeah.
So, I've just got some mini asylum, hospital, haunting stories.
That's fine. I'm ready to be spooked.
Yeah. I think, how many is there all in total? 13.
Awesome. Lucky 13.
So, these are, like, written from people who either experienced them or been told by people who have experienced, like, working in abandoned hospitals and asylums. So, the first one is called The Old Operating Room. Abandoned hospital in my town is very active. It was also used in the movie Boneyard. When they blew the hospital up in the movie, apparently they actually burned some of it, so they abandoned it completely. Still have tables, desks, chairs, boxes and boxes of files. Not sure if half of the sightings are squatters or paranormal, but a friend of mine snuck in and had a series of lights turning off and on that led him and his friends to an operation room.
Aww.
The light turned off and they panicked and ran out. They also had batteries drained and could only make out the light outside through the roof access hatch they used. Also had a co-worker who worked at a renovated sanatorium turned tree farm. It's a very odd thing.
Hmm.
The basement had screams and grabbings. Still had an attendance board where the old nurses still signed in for duty even though there wasn't any chalk. Some other things that I cannot remember happened that led him to quit.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I was like... this one's called 911 Calls, so this is quite a short one. I'm a nurse that worked at a psychiatric hospital for 5 years. That place was haunted as shit. Police would call us in the middle of the night saying some little girl who identified herself as Satana was calling 911 from a certain extension in the hospital. That extension, the arts and crafts room, nobody goes there at night, nobody, I assure you. Yet there's obviously something there and it calls 911 a lot. Lots of other stories from that place, but that's the craziest, creepiest one.
Oh my God, imagine, like, there's something in that room that calls 911 a lot.
Can you imagine answering that call? You're like, 911, what's your emergency? And it's
I
want to play or some shit, but like, goodbye. So, number 3. This one's called The Power Was Still On. When I was a teenager, 20 plus years ago, my friends and I trespassed on a condemned insane asylum called Eloise in southeastern Michigan. The worst thing wasn't that it was at night with shitty flashlights, the dirty patient records scattered on the floor, the broken furniture, the torn up walls, the leaking water pipes, or the huge fungal bloom from the leaking water. The worst part was finding a tunnel and following it to a place inside where power was still on. There was a light and an
ominous,
thank you, I don't know why. Ominous looking double doors and an active security camera. It was like, why is this here? What's going on? Later on, I found out that the asylum and a nearby hospital were connected. However, the Wikipedia page says it closed in 1984, but we were there several years after that. I think I saved one of the patient records somewhere.
Firstly, why the fuck do, like, so many asylums and stuff have maintenance tunnels underneath? Is this a normal thing? Because Ashley's story, in our listener episode, because he fucking went in and, like, tunnels underneath, then Penhurst has him.
I feel like it was, like, because of the war. So if they were, like, predated before war or during war, they would have had maintenance tunnels for, like, evacuation. Yeah. That would have made sense. However, when you've... I don't know. Just have a sip of my drink.
Or are they fire? I'm sure, actually, Penhurst, it's called, like, fire tunnels. So maybe if the building's on fire, if you can get down to the tunnels, then you're all right. Imagine being trapped in the tunnels, though, because the building's above her.
Oh, God, no.
I'd
rather just be outside.
Yeah, I'd rather just not be on the property.
I think it's the fact, though, that, like, they carried on to the room and then it's connected to a hospital and it says that it's meant to be closed and stuff and it's not. That's weird.
Suspish. Is extra shit going on there?
Area 51.
Aliens.
Okay, so number four. I was a night watchman at an abandoned mental hospital turned state park for a summer in college. The only creepy thing that happened was one night I was with one of the state park police and we saw flashlights in one of the buildings. Kids constantly broke in and other people broke in to gut the old buildings of any copper they could find. So I was just saying one night we saw flashlights moving around so we went in. The officer pulled a gun and flashlight and in we went. We could hear her footsteps on the floor above us and we slowly and quietly went upstairs. We checked every room and found nothing. Then we heard footsteps above us again. This happened for a few floors until we were on the top floor below the roof. We heard footsteps up on the roof so we went up there, still nothing. We never found anyone or any indication that anyone had been there. It was frigging creepy.
Ugh, no.
I'd just be like, good sir, are you paying the bills in this place to be banging around?
I still don't know why people would voluntarily go into old abandoned buildings.
I used to do it when I was younger. So we used to, like, me and my friends went into, like, half of it was, like, burnt down and half of it was just, like, a mess. But we went into, like, this building that used to be, like, an old butcher's building.
Mm.
And we just used to piss about. But now thinking about it, I was like, maybe I shouldn't have done that, but... Like a massive group of us would just go.
If it didn't feel scary at the time.
I mean, we'd go broad daylight. It would never be at night. Oh, yeah. I was too young to, like, having escapades in the middle of the night. Unless I was drunk in a field when I was at my friend's house. Don't listen to that, Mum. So, number five. There is this abandoned mental hospital in my town called Prudhoe Hospital, which is sort of the scary place kids go to show bravado. It's surrounded by woods, so obviously you hear lots about it. You hear lots of stories from people after it was abandoned, but the spookiest things come from when it was still in service. My mum...
Oh, is this an Irish one?
Probably. My mum worked as an auxiliary nurse there for years, and she said at night the crippled kids who couldn't move due to severe diseases and birth defects would somehow get out of their cribs and into the middle of the floor in the wards.
I can't.
Whatever was doing this would also go around and remove blankets from all the patients and again pile them in the centre of the room. Eventually, security was hired, believing it was someone getting into the hospital at night and doing all these things to scare people or to just be trouble. However, even with security, they never found out who was doing these things that night.
Oh my gosh. Fuck that. Oh, fuck
I just get like that. Goosebumps after that one.
Oh, I can feel tears in the back of my eyes.
This one's quite a short one. My dad worked at a mental hospital that used to be connected to an abandoned nun's home by underground passage.
Another underground fucking passage.
He says that one night he was walking down there when he saw a praying nun. I'm out. I think this one gave me the heebie-jeebies just because I don't like nuns. He walked by her and said hello. She did not acknowledge him. My dad does not believe in ghosts, but he says there was a nun down there that night. Imagine. Oh no. Oh,
poor woman's just trying to say a vow to God.
So number seven. I had a guy I worked with who used to be a hospital wardsman. He was telling me about a night where a few young nurses and some of the other wardsmen were going to hang around late one night and conduct a seance in one of the older unused wards.
Idiots.
Anyway, he agreed and one night they did it. He didn't believe a word of it but took part for fun. He said they called through one spirit who identified himself as Nigel. And when asked if he was good or evil, the planchet flicked straight to evil. At this stage, my mate assumed people were pushing it and just laughed it off. After some more unintelligible responses, the planchet started going ballistic, flicking from one letter to the other. Someone asked the scribe what it was saying and this guy goes, I can't make it out. Hang on, it's saying, kill baby Cassie, kill baby Cassie, kill. Is it saying Cassie kill baby? One of the female nurses ran screaming and absolutely lost it, one of the girls running to help her. It turns out this girl was named Cassie and she had a secret abortion 2 weeks prior.
Oh.
She had told no one about the pregnancy, not even a boyfriend.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, oh. Imagine. That's freaky. I'd just be like, who are you? To go into my fucking business.
Excuse me, hon, that's personal.
Number 8. A few years ago, my cousin and his friends were walking in the woods outside of Frederick and found an old abandoned insane asylum. It was all boarded up, grown over, dark, dusty. It looked like it was out of a movie. Obviously, my cousin and his friends broke in to look around. The first room they went into was full of file cabinets, holdings, records of all the patients that used to be there. And they found a bunch of really creepy ass pictures. Another room was nothing but concrete and drains on the floor. The walls had chains attached to them. And in the centre of the room was a table that had what looked like torture tools and beating sticks. Other than that, they didn't really see anything, but they claimed to have heard talking, footsteps and demented giggling.
Oh.
Oh dear. It's not very good, is it?
No. You sound like a mum who's just walked in to find her kids have smothered each other in Sudocrem. She's like, oh dear. It's not very good, is it? These two are in trouble now.
Apparently, there's when I say no, but I like say it in a very stern voice. Scott says I sound like a Victorian school headmistress.
Ah, yes, I can see that.
But I was like, I was like trying to say no. And he was like, it's not, you just do it randomly sometimes. Yeah. I'm like, all right, okay.
Yeah, your oh no then was, I'm not angry, just disappointed.
Do you think that's acceptable? That's what I'd say to my cats and the dogs. And it's like, oh. Oh, Emma, bless you.
Yeah.
Number 9. I work night shift as a CNA in a hospital. I had a patient last year. He was in his 50s, totally with it. I had him for a week or two and never showed signs of confusion at night or otherwise. He liked to keep his door open at all times and he was in a room close to the nurse's station, so he saw myself and plenty of other staff walk by throughout the night. One night around 2:30 in the morning, he sees me walking by and calls me into his room. Is that your son or something? Who? I asked. The little boy that's been following you all night.
No.
I proceeded to ask what he looked like because I could not see him. He said he looked to be about 7 years old with short dark hair and a baseball cap. Both of us were freaked out about the situation and he requested to keep his lights on after that. I'm getting chills thinking about it now.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, that poor kid.
Oh, I felt such a disgusting noise.
Yeah.
Number 10. This is one of my favourites, I think.
Okay.
I love anything that will get my heart pumping and the adrenaline flowing, from extreme sports to urban exploration. I've almost done it all. But there was one time when I really considered my beliefs as an atheist. I reckon that ghosts and spirits and all that cannot possibly exist due to the lack of physical evidence, but one night really got my mind going. It was about 16 years ago when I lived in Topeka, Kansas. Now, some of you will know what I'll be talking about already, but for those of you who don't, keep reading. I was a keen urban explorer. There was just something thrilling about breaking into abandoned buildings and exploring them.
Nope.
I had always known about the Topeka State Hospital due to the numerous haunted stories about it, but I had never really thought about exploring it. My friend Reese was also an avid urban explorer, and one night he suggested to me that we go check it out at night. Not believing in ghosts or scary stories as such, I instantly agreed to go. We got our bags ready with torches, phones and a snack or two, and waited for sunset. On arriving, it was already pitch black. There were no lights as the place had been closed since 1990, so we flipped on our torches and crunched our way up the gravel to the front entrance. It was locked as we expected, so we made our way around the red bricked exterior, looking for a way in. About halfway around, we came across a boarded up window. I offered Reese a parting glance and a slight nod of his head indicated we were thinking along the same idea. I braced my shoulder and bashed into the window. The sound echoed around the empty halls and the surrounding forest for what seemed ages. The second bash proved successful as the wood splintered and fell to the ground in a large bang. Reese whispered in my ear, honestly, if nobody comes after us after that, then we're safe.
Safe from the authorities, not from like the fucking ghosts. I know, yeah.
I climbed in through the small gap before lending a hand to Reese to do the same. Once we were inside, we flipped on our torches and we were met with a view of peeling wallpaper and a heavy, musty smell. We crunched our way through the first room, just enjoying the rush of adrenaline as we tiptoed our way through the halls before we heard footsteps running in the room above us.
I can't breathe.
Immediately, my heart skipped a beat and I glanced at Reese, who put his fingers to his lip and indicated that we should turn our torches off. In the pitch black, I must admit, I started getting scared. Got hair on my mouth. But I carried on and we made our way up to the second floor to see who was with us in the house. After 3 minutes of looking, we turned up empty and were about to leave when we heard more footsteps running, and this time we were sure that we weren't just hearing things, as a light rain of dust fell from the room. Mm-hmm. We immediately thought we were being pranked, so we ran up to the third floor and hoped to catch this person, but once again it turned up empty. We had enough and just started going down when we heard a door creak from above. This was it, our chance. We sprinted up, barred through the door, and we ended up on the roof of the asylum, empty. Just then we heard a door being slammed to the floor beneath us and some guttural whispering noise. I can't tell you how fast we got out of there, but I can tell you that we probably ran faster than the time we got chased by the police. To this day, I still have no idea what was running around with us in that asylum. I like to believe it was some bad prank, but I have this nagging feeling that it wasn't.
Oh man.
Number 11. So, a friend of mine was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis and was upset. Aww. So upset over it that she made a suicide attempt.
No.
She landed in the mental health wing of the big hospital, and I went to visit her one evening. Had a hell of a time finding the right place and felt like I walked through miles of increasingly decrepit hospital before I found the right wing. Went through a set of double doors and found myself staring down a dimly lit hallway with an incredibly creepy, weathered looking old lady in a housecoat standing right in the middle of it. I walked down the hallway nervously, but not taking my eyes off of the old woman. She didn't take her eyes off me either. I flinched as I walked by her, but she didn't move. 10 feet beyond her was the doorway to the waiting room of the ward I was looking for. I breathed a sigh of relief as I reached the doors, then glanced over my shoulder to see if the woman had moved. She was right behind me, staring into my face. I don't know how she managed to silently cover that 10 feet just as fast as I had moved, but she did.
Don't look behind you. Never look. Not now.
Oh, can you shit me up now? No, like, why?
She's there. No, just, we have never, if someone's giving you the heebie-jeebies, I would never turn around and look back at them once I was through to safety.
Yeah, I'd just ignore it. I would just ignore it.
I'd just get through the doors and then close the doors and cry.
Okay. Oh, this is another long one as well. A few years back, prior to sworn LEO, I worked as a security guard at a hospital. Sounds cool, and it was, except for the fact it was 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. I worked alone, and the hospital I guarded was abandoned.
No!
Who fucking lets people work on their own? Anyway, a year prior, the hospital built a brand new facility to replace their 5-story tall 1900s building. When the employees and patients left, they left everything in a hurry. It looked like the people just disappeared in a hurry. Partially full coffee mugs, uniforms hanging on coat racks, wheelchairs in the halls, everything as it was, with a good coating of dust.
So that's creepy when there's like a half full coffee mug and as if people have literally left like that in a hurry.
That's
not
bizarre.
Even stopping to pick up your coat.
Yeah, they're like, just
fucked
off. I was always a third shift kind of person. I don't get night jitters or scare easily, but this place could do it to the best of them. Every night I would walk or ride a wheelchair through the halls that were supposed to be empty and unused. Every night I would end up having to close doors and relock them. I would walk one floor, move up to the next and continue. I got a little shaky when an hour after already walking a hallway, I would have turned off the same hall lights and closed the same doors again in the building.
No.
Or when I would be walking a hall and then I would hear footsteps on the floor above me, doors opening and closing, elevators moving from floor to floor, phones ringing, nurse call lights going on, etc.
That sounds really active then.
Yeah, like proper...
Jesus.
Let's have a rave up in here.
Yeah.
There were only 3 times I got the I hate this shit feeling. First time I was checking offices on the 4th floor, there was a light on in a locked hallway, no surprise. This hallway hadn't been renovated since the place was built, short of electricity, so everything was from the 1920s. Unlock the door, flip the lights, walk out, relock the door and turn to leave. Behind me I hear the flip of a light switch. Through the frosted glass, I see the lights went back on. I left the hallway alone that night.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, I'm out of here.
Can you imagine the ghosts, though? Like, going on with their daily life. This man comes in, turns the lights off. They're like, the fuck you think you're doing?
I'm reading.
I'm trying to read.
Second time was riding an elevator between floors. I was taking the elevator to the top floor. When at about 4 of the 5 floors, I hear laughing and muffled talking, kept getting louder as it got higher. Elevator makes it to number 5, door swing open and absolute silence. Of course, every light was on the floor, even in the patient rooms. I checked high and low, not a single living and breathing person in that place except for me.
Okay, like, I've got one thing to say here. Why would you take the fucking lift?
No idea.
Imagine
you're taking the stairs.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I would not risk getting trapped in a lift in an old building like that.
Some people are lazy, I guess, so they're just... Anyway.
Or lazy or dumb.
both. Third and worst of all was just an average night. I'm on the lower level, locking a door in a corridor. The door had a glass middle, but on the back side it was covered by white tape. The room it led to was dark, and the hallway a few feet behind me was partially lit, so the glass acted like a perfect mirror. Everything normal, key in, lock clicks, turning the key. From behind me I see the full outline of a person walk past me in the hallway. No. Clear as day, just a full shadow of a person walk past.
Nope.
I froze only for about a second and then ran into the hall after the supposed person. No one, just silence. Awesome gig, but after a year it felt like I should have been an exorcist with all this stuff happening. The other guards that worked on the days opposite to mine had the same stuff happen, except they always saw nuns walking into rooms just outside of an old rectory chapel on the third floor. Better nuns than something else, I guess.
Not if you're Emma. You hate nuns. I can't believe he worked there for a year, though.
I just went, but that's it.
Oh, that's fucking... Good luck sleeping tonight.
I just thought they were really cool, because they
are really good.
Like, hearing it from, like, other people's perspective, and, like, yeah. Some are quite subtle. Most of them are, like, people you just happen to be working.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't appreciate getting a 911 call from, like...
Fuck, oh.
That's awful, awful.
I just
got goosebumps for, like, them ones. Yeah. Especially the one where, like, the woman's right behind him, because it would literally, like, it would shit me up.
It's like in Doctor Who where... You know those angels where you don't blink, you gotta, because they can't move whilst you're looking at them. It's like that, but real life. I know. I'm saying I can't believe that guy worked there for a year as a security guard, but then that's because he's not me, and I would never, ever in a million years take that kind of job anyway, because...
It's like Richie, because obviously he does security work.
Yeah.
There was one time when, like, he was posted at Trentham, and it's, like, night shifts.
Yeah.
So he has to, like, roam about Trentham on his own. I mean, there's another person, but they have to do another part of Trentham. Yeah. And all the lights automatically switch off because they're timed.
Yeah.
I think he showed me videos of, like, him walking in, like, basically the fucking wilderness.
Yeah, because parts of it are...
And he says that, like, you know, you see, like, obviously animals that come out at night, but it does shit you up because, obviously, their eyes are, like, reflective.
Yep.
And he's like, it's quite eerie. It took him a while to get used to.
Yeah.
Because it's so dark that even, like, a torch, the torchlight doesn't go that far.
Yeah. And it's kind of in those situations where you'd almost be better not using a torch because then your eyes adjust to more of the darkness.
Yeah.
I had to walk at Alton Towers once from Air all the way back to, like, the essentially Tower Street, like, the main entrance. And it was... All the lights had been switched off then. There was four of us. All the lights had been switched off. But we walked through this bit called the Haunted Hollow, which is just... It's kind of like a walkway by Jewel to... By Battle Galleons, which is the pirate bits.
Yeah.
And it's got all this creepy shit in, like, graveyards and stuff. And all the lights have been turned off. Sound effects fucking hadn't been turned off, though. So as you went past the sensor, they'd, like, start, and some of them were very creepy. That was not nice. Also, at Towers, I never used to like walking past the actual Towers house itself in the dark, because, like Richie said, when it's pitch black, you start seeing things as well.
Yeah, because, like, you're already, like, I don't know, you're already freaked out at that point.
Your senses are already really heightened.
So obviously you can convince yourself that you see shit. That's why I always, like, it's like in the corner of my eye sometimes, like it'd be broad daylight and I feel like I'm seeing something in the corner of my eye. So I look over and I'm like, what the fuck was that? And it's normally like shadows and stuff. Yeah. But then because I don't see it again after I turn away, I just,
You just kind of forget about it. But in the dark, your mind absolutely plays tricks on you.
Yeah.
I think I might leave the landing light on when we go to sleep tonight so that if we need a wee in the night, it's not bad.
I guess, like, you know, with certain houses and stuff, you can get, like, a bad juju.
Yes.
But, like, I mean, with this house in particular, I don't really feel anything anyway.
No, I've never felt anything in this house. But then...
The only time I felt anything was, like, at my nan's house when I was younger. But that's because, like...
I've had bad vibes in a house once when... We went on holiday to Weymouth and stayed, when I was, like, teenager, and stayed in this little... It was, like, a cottage that had originally been, like, three one-up, one-down cottages or something.
Yeah.
And I stayed in a room downstairs that was off the living room. And I got bad vibes in there. I couldn't sleep. Yeah. I felt like I was always being watched.
One of the houses I stayed at when I was at uni, it was in my second year. My bedroom was on the first, like, well, the ground floor, essentially, at the back of the house.
Yeah.
But, like... We had dealings with, like, people, you know, getting burgled and, like, robbed and stuff.
Yeah.
And that terrified me because I was, like, I couldn't sleep very well then because I could hear like shit in the back garden. Yeah. Probably rats, you know, Stoke-on-Trent.
Yeah.
But then obviously when people were like having the houses broke into, and one was like the people were in the house and someone broke into the house while they were in there. So it was awful because obviously my room was like first port of call kind of thing. It was awful.
Yeah. Anyway, good luck sleeping tonight, everybody.
I'm going to sleep like an angel. I'm just going to be like, take me, demon, go on.
At least you wouldn't have to go to work on Monday.
Oh, yeah. I really can't be arsed.
Right. Thank you for listening. Please head over to our Instagram, which is at Gin and Spooks, for any like photos relating to what we've talked about in the episode. We also have a blog, which is ginandspooks.wordpress.com. We'll put all the photos on there as well.
If you have any ghost stories or drink suggestions of your own, please email them to us at ginandspooks@gmail.com. Or send us a direct message on Facebook, Instagram, tag us on Twitter.
Yeah. Twitter is at Gin and Spooks Pod.
Yeah.
And Facebook, I think, is just Gin and Spooks Podcast.
But just type in Gin and Spooks. I'm sure something will come up.
Ask Google.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.